won't be afraid of the dark. Just relax and let the darkness fall over you.
Welcome to Afraidish, a podcast where we take a deep dive into the history and paranormal while enjoying some tasty adult beverages. From ghost sightings to hauntings, urban legends and cryptids, let's get weird and afraid-ish together. Welcome to episode 37. I'm Paul.
And I'm Ashley.
Yeah. We have had a long month.
Yeah.
Well, no. Long October.
Yeah.
This month basically just started.
Yeah. It's already fucking halfway over.
Yeah. Almost Thanksgiving. So, yeah.
Yeah.
What are we drinking?
I'm drinking 7-Up Zero with the Lime Rum Haven, and a little bit of the strawberry vodka that we have left over from the summer.
Nice.
It's pretty good, actually.
I had the Calico Jack chocolate coconut rum with root beer.
Okay.
At about 3 shots. Maybe 4 because it was a lot.
Yeah, you put a lot in there.
Anyways, so it was good. And now I'm about to open Mr. Pumpkin by Mother's Brewing Company.
Ooh.
That's all right. Not bad. You taste the pumpkin. Yeah.
Yeah. It has that mouthfeel that I don't like that beer has.
Yeah, I know. All right. Let's get into it. So this was tough trying to figure out what to do with my 5 fun facts. So I chose bed and breakfast because the location for this episode was recently a B&B.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
Here are 5 fun facts about bed and breakfasts. These facts are based on global B&Bs as a whole. So if you hear some facts that you don't agree with locally, this is globally.
Sure.
5 fun facts. So, number 1. Bed and breakfasts have a rich history with the concept dating back many years. However, it is believed that the term bed and breakfast first came into use in the United Kingdom after World War II.
Oh, okay.
During this time, many people from overseas needed places to stay, and residents opened their homes to offer rooms and breakfast to these overnight guests.
Interesting.
Yeah. Number 2, each bed and breakfast is one of a kind, unlike chain hotels that all seem to blend. B&Bs are bursting with character and history, making them truly special places to stay. Moreover, the innkeepers who run these establishments take great pride in their work and are always professional, ensuring that your stay is comfortable and memorable. Number 3, when staying at a B&B, breakfast is not just a simple and boring affair, it can be quite the opposite. The breakfast options can range from a light and simple continental breakfast to a luxurious and indulgent 4-course hot meal, all depending on the guest preference and any special dietary requirements that they may have. The B&B staff take pride in planning and preparing meals that will satisfy their guests and provide them with a great start of the day. Number 4. Most people associate B&Bs with a creepy or strange vibe, but that perception is far from the truth.
Well, I mean, you're staying in someone else's home.
Yeah.
That's creepy to me, though. I don't like it.
In reality, B&Bs offer a romantic and cozy stay with breathtaking views and one-of-a-kind surrounding that make for an unforgettable experience.
You're staying in someone else's home.
I mean,
how is that romantic?
If they're built for B&Bs, I mean, that's different.
Mm-hmm. You know, bed and breakfast keeper, like innkeepers, they got some stories.
Yeah.
It is living in the trenches, running a bed and breakfast.
Yeah. I don't know. I'd stay at least one time.
It'll be a sexless night for you.
Yeah. Number five. While the rates at a bed and breakfast may appear to be high at first glance, there is great value to be found when compared to a night in a hotel in a big city where everything is priced separately. Bed and breakfast often include free parking, free breakfast, Wi-Fi, and some have a free happy hour as well as other amenities.
A free happy hour?
Yeah.
What does that mean? Happy hours are never free. Happy hours offer discounts on booze.
I mean, and appetizers. I guess some have, like, in the pricing, free happy hours.
So just, like, free drinks?
I guess so. That's what they say.
Okie dokie.
Yeah. All right. Now to my story.
Okay.
The Morse Mill Hotel can be found in Morse Mill, a small unincorporated community situated in Jefferson County, Missouri's Merrimack Valley. It is located approximately 5 miles northwest of Hillsboro along Missouri Route B. A post office called Morse Mill has been in operation since 1859.
Wow.
The first building erected on the premises is a one-bedroom farmhouse in 1816, which was utilized as a farmer's residence. The location had previously been an indigenous burial site. I know.
White people never learn.
I know. And had been governed by the Spanish under Louisiana Territory. By 1816, the area was known as the Missouri Territory, and William Clark of the Lewis and Clark Expedition served as the territorial governor.
Those are real explorers, and what's-his-face Pike can learn a lesson or two from them.
Yeah, no shit. In 1847, John H. Morris, a bridge engineer and entrepreneur, settled in the region and established a grist mill on the banks of the breathtaking Big River, naming
grist.
Yeah.
It just sounds awful. I don't even know what that is.
I looked it up before and I forgot.
Is it like some type of cereal?
I don't know.
Crop? Like,
I'll have to look it up again. Grist? I'm not sure. Naming it Morse Mill. The mill was the most successful and longest running mill in Missouri and was responsible for Morse Mill's name.
Wow.
The small town. Yep.
Damn.
The initial deed was signed by President James Madison, and the original registry still exists.
A grist mill is a mill that grinds grain into flour.
Yeah.
They just call it a flour mill.
I don't know why they call it grist. It's
okay, whatever.
Probably an old-timey word.
Sure. Yeah. Sorry, continue.
Anyways, the original cell deed also still exists, which is pretty awesome.
The original what?
Deed.
Oh. Okay.
In 1859, President Buchanan granted ownership to John Morris by signing over the deed to him.
Wow.
At that time, the house was extended to 5,300 square feet and 3 stories, constructed of limestone and maple.
Nice.
The property has a New Orleans-style balcony and a widow's walk.
Oh.
Yeah. While some sources claim that the house has 3 stories, the property information from MorseMillHotel.com states that it has 4 stories. The basement may be included, but I'm not sure. Yeah, the website says 4 stories, but when I looked at the picture, it shows like 3 stories. But I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
John Morse enlisted in the Confederate Army at the start of the Civil War. When the war broke out, his home was converted into a makeshift hospital for Confederate prisoners of war. Because most of those places are. After the war, Morse established a contracting business and built the Sandy Creek-covered bridge, which is still standing today and looks like a long red barn. Are you paying attention?
Yes, I'm looking at pictures.
Okay.
What?
You didn't say anything, so...
Sorry, I'm paying attention. I'm looking at pictures of the mill.
Okay. He also opened 2 general stores and represented Jefferson and Washington counties as a state senator.
Oh.
Morse had grand plans for Morse Mill, envisioning it as a tourist destination, though he did not live to see his vision come true come to fruition.
They usually don't.
No. Upon his death, the Riverside Hotel was established in his former home. The hotel was expanded to include 18 guest rooms and a fourth floor. Morse Mill became a thriving tourist town, with the hotel serving as a popular destination for those seeking relaxation in the vicinity of the Big River. Throughout its existence, the hotel has had many uses, including as a hospital for Confederate prisoners of war, a brothel, a speakeasy, a United States post office, and a halfway house. It is also believed to have been a stop on the Underground Railroad.
Oh.
The stone wall in front of the building was carved by freed slaves.
Okay. So I'm assuming when they say that they were Confederate prisoners of war, the soldiers that were the prisoners had fought on the Confederate side.
I think so.
So they were prisoners of the Union.
I think so, yeah.
Okay.
Even though Morse himself was a Confederate soldier.
Of course he was.
The hotel saw its most success during the 20s and 30s. Guests include pilot Charles Lindbergh, black and white film actress Clara Bow.
Oh.
Who was the inspiration for Betty Boop.
Yes, I know that.
Yeah. Tom Mix, a black and white cowboy film star. Gangster Al Capone. Because where hasn't he been in Missouri?
Fucking. It's so weird, too, to think that someone like Al Capone was here.
I know, it's crazy.
In fucking Missouri.
Yeah.
Ugh.
And J. Frank Dalton. So this next part is only speculation.
Okay.
Dalton is in. Interesting character. He claimed to be Jesse James. And although his claims did not hold up under the scrutiny of James family members, many people do believe he was the real deal. And when he died in 1951 at 103,
Jesus,
his death certificate recorded his name as Jesse Woodson James.
What?
Yeah, it's a whole deal. It's crazy. As sheriff by the name of Orrin Baker, went to the funeral home where Dalton was taken and confirmed that he was indeed Jesse James based on markings on his body, including a missing fingertip. I'll get there. Don't worry.
Okay.
Dalton's gravestone bears the name of Jesse James as well.
What?
Okay. Yeah, it's crazy. Okay. If we believe this, then Jesse James frequented the Morse Mill Hotel. The official website for the hotel claims that Jesse James and his gang left their names in the register along with doodles. Apparently one of his gang members was a cartoonist.
Yeah. I mean, who wasn't?
Yeah. The claim that Dalton was Jesse James is not widely accepted by historians. Jesse James was killed in 1882, and his death was well documented. His killer was Robert Ford, a member of his gang, and there is no credible evidence to support the idea that he faked his death and lived on as Dalton.
Yeah, but what if?
Well,
I mean, really, what if? What if his murder was because it was his fellow gangman, his brother.
Yeah.
Who killed him? Who knows? You know what? Anything is possible.
Anything is possible, but who knows?
Anything is possible if you just believe.
Yeah. It's not uncommon for legends and folklore to grow around famous figures like Jesse James.
Sure.
The Morse Mill Hotel's assertion of James and his gang leaving their names in the register could be part of the hotel's lore to attract visitors.
Yep, like the Stanley Hotel was the site of a gruesome family. But no, I'm just kidding.
Especially since Jesse James was known to use aliases and hide his identity. During Prohibition, the hotel was the perfect location for a speakeasy. The whiskey that was served was Al Capone's whiskey.
Of course it was. I mean, who... Where else will they have got it?
I know. Charlie Chaplin marked his register of his stay there. He was a known womanizer.
Yeah.
An elderly woman says when she was a child, her mom would complain about his... Okay. An elderly woman says she... What? Fuck.
A woman who is currently elderly. Yeah.
An elderly woman says when she was a child, her mom would complain about this Chaplin man carrying on with young girls.
He was... Yeah. Pedo?
Maybe. He liked the younger ones. So.
Fucking men.
Yeah. Here's another famous person who had a history with the hotel. You'll find out why she became famous. Bertha Gifford was born near Morse Mill in 1876. Bertha's family was a Christian family and well-known.
It wasn't.
Yeah. In her 20s, Bertha married a man named Henry Graham, and they took on the managing of the Morse Mill Hotel. Graham became ill and died. Later, people would assume Bertha killed him with arsenic.
Nope.
Here's why people assumed she killed him.
Occult rituals and sacrifice.
Close. No. After Graham died, Bertha married Gene Gifford, a man she was rumored to be having an affair with.
Not if they were married.
No, she was...
I'm kidding. It was a joke. Sorry.
Anyways. They moved to Catawissa, which was several miles away, in 1911. That same year, Bertha went to the Pacific Pharmacy and purchased a large amount of arsenic for, quote, rats.
Oh, it's always... You know what? You know what? I get it, ladies. I do.
Yeah. Of course you do. Anyways. In 1917, she would also make large purchases of arsenic from the Powers Pharmacy.
What?
Bertha was known to be a great cook, and she made great candy.
Bertha's out here poisoning the entire fucking town! Yeah. What the hell?
Candy that killed... Bertha poisoned several children with her arsenic candy.
Fucking bitch.
Yeah, I know. Sherman Pounds was a drunk who spent some time at the Giffords farm. He died after some violent stomach pains, but some assumed it was alcohol that got him.
No, it was Bertha's candy.
Yeah. His granddaughter died in the same house several years later.
Fucking Bertha strikes again.
Yeah. Bertha made potions, too, that she administered to people on their sick beds.
Oh.
Gene's mother, Bertha's mother-in-law, died, and then his younger brother.
Oh.
Jim Ogle, a hired hand they owed money, came down with malaria or something.
Oh.
And Bertha nursed him to death.
Of sure.
The death started to pile up, and anywhere between 17 and 26 are credited to her.
Wow.
I know, it's crazy. She was finally arrested in 1928 and charged with the murders of one man, Edward Brimley, and two boys, Elmer and Lloyd Shamel. They were about 9 and 12,
that's
I think.
That's so sad. What did they do?
They were just the wrong place. One report states that after Gifford was charged and was awaiting her murder trial in jail, she would pace the cell and howl like a wolf and make other ungodly noises. She was found to be insane and sentenced to the Missouri State Hospital for the Insane in Farmington until she died in 1951. Bertha, her two husbands, and a handful of her victims are all laid to rest in a nearby small country cemetery.
Oh, thank you. Listen.
It was back in the day where they buried everybody together, I guess.
Listen. Her poor victims have to spend eternity sharing the same ground as their murderess.
Yeah, maybe they're... That is... It's pretty wild. I don't know.
That is so insulting.
I know.
Just saying.
Morse Mill was once a thriving town, but as new highways were built...
Bertha killed everybody in it.
Yeah. But as new highways were built and resorts in the Ozarks became more appealing, it began to decline. A flood in 1993 further contributed to its downfall.
Aww.
However, Patrick Sheehan saw the potential in the Morse Mill Hotel and bought it. After renovating and restoring the building, he opened it as a B&B for overnight stays, paranormal investigations, and tours.
Honestly, I'm surprised. I am surprised that, I mean, I'm not, but I am surprised that it wasn't bought by Johnny Morris.
Yeah.
Because that sounds like, if that wasn't closer to the Springfield area, you know, it would be all over. His name would be all over that shit.
When I said he renovated and restored the building, I meant to say he was in the middle of renovating and restoring it.
Okay.
So anyways, but in September 2021, Sheehan closed the doors to tours, paranormal investigations, and overnight stays, and put the property up for sale. It has since become a private residence, and while it's unclear whether Sheehan still owns the property, he is believed to currently reside there. For more information on the Morse Mill Hotel's restoration, you can visit their website. He did do a full restoration and redid it for private residence.
Okay.
So, and all the pictures are pretty cool because he's got a complete, he completely redid everything.
Okay.
Sorry, I can't.
So he turned a bed and breakfast into a private residence.
Yeah.
Which... a bed and breakfast is a private residence in which rooms are let.
Well, you can't go there now, so...
Okay.
So you can't stay there, you can't investigate there anymore.
Okay.
So a lot of people were very, very sad.
I bet.
But it's understandable. Because on the main page, their website says, "Closed to the public at this time, no exceptions." The latest post on their Facebook page says... quote, "The hotel is permanently closed to tours, investigations, and overnight stays. The building is a private residence. Please do not disturb the owners in their home. Thank you." And he closed it due to health issues. He has Parkinson's now. So
okay.
He couldn't keep up with everything.
Right.
So, yeah. I mean, it's not a bad building. The inside... the pictures in the inside looked really nice.
Yeah.
From all the updates. And now for the hauntings.
Finally.
The Morse Mill Hotel is quite infamous for its eerie and inexplicable happenings. Many people who have stayed here have reported strange encounters that have piqued the interest of paranormal investigators from all over the country. In 2008, a team of paranormal investigators... made a documentary about the Morse Mill Hotel. They claimed to have experienced something unworldly themselves while filming. Apparently, they saw a tall, dark shadow figure and a fire poker that had been bent into a curve by an unseen force.
Huh.
Yeah, believe it or not.
Okay.
Yeah. They also heard several strange sounds, including a loud metallic sound. Some members of the team even reported being scratched.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah. Despite the haunted reputation of the hotel, the current owner has grown accustomed to paranormal activity. He bought the place, he had no idea that it was haunted. Disembodied footsteps are a common occurrence, but he takes it all in stride as he works on the ongoing project.
What do you mean you have no idea it was haunted?
I don't know.
You buy an old building, and then you're surprised when it's haunted. Like...
I mean, skeptics.
Yeah, but skeptics, like... I'm not... delusional enough to believe that what I believe is the truth.
Right.
But skeptics are. And then they're always surprised when it's like, oh shit, I'm having weird experiences that I can't explain. maybe some things just can't be explained.
Yeah. Yep. So there were reports of glowing orbs, doors opening and closing, locks being locked and unlocked, and even apparitions being seen in a hotel. A group of people, including police officers, went to investigate the hotel, and they experienced, and what they experienced was quite eerie. As soon as they turned on a K2 and a flashlight and put it on the display cabinet, they started lighting up. I mean, if it was close to wiring stuff, maybe, but who knows?
Who knows?
One of the police officers thought he had heard someone whispering behind him, but when he turned around, there was no one there. One of the young girls who was with them suddenly felt dizzy and had to sit down. She felt better after moving to a different area. While one of them was giving a history of the hotel, they kept hearing a noise outside the window. They stopped and had someone go outside and check the noise, but there was no explanation. One of the officers brought his night vision glasses, and while they were finishing the history, he started seeing a figure behind the large upright display case. At first, all he could see were the legs, but at least two of the other officers looked and agreed that it wasn't a reflection of any of them in the room. They even tried using dowsing rods and received responses to the questions they were asking while holding the rods.
I'm less convinced by dowsing rods.
Me too, because they're easy to manipulate.
They're easy to trick yourself into thinking that you're communicating with spirits. I don't think, I mean, yes, people manipulate to manipulate, but I think a lot of people are genuine and they truly believe it's the rods when it's their hands twitching. It's them swaying from side to side unconsciously.
Yeah, that's what I think too. Who knows? When they placed a flashlight on the stairs, it started going on and off in response while they were using the dowsing rods. There are some interesting and spooky tales associated with the old house. According to some reports, a ghost by the name of Annabelle resides in the attic.
No, thanks.
She claims to be 12 years old and is often seen playing with toys brought by investigators.
Not a chance.
However, some have come forward in claiming that this entity states to be 5 or 6 years old, because apparently they talk to her. And, you know, of course there's an entity called Annabelle. I wonder if there was a creepy-ass doll there for her to play with or possess.
No, thank you.
In the basement, there is a room that contains shackles, and it is believed that a body was buried there. It is said that the ghost of a former slave haunts this area. Strange sounds, such as clattering of cooking implements, are often heard in the kitchen.
Is the kitchen the original kitchen?
I think so.
Probably not.
I don't know. While some believe that both of the Giffords haunt the location, there are doubts about it. Bertha's first husband, Henry Graham, is considered to be more likely. Apart from the house, spirits have also been witnessed outside the property. Many groups have recorded EVPs, electronic voice phenomena, numbering into the hundreds.
Wow.
It is interesting to note that most experiences are not negative. There are claims that at least 20 spirits are present on the property.
Jeez, that's kind of... That's a lot.
Yeah, I know.
That's hard to believe.
I know. And I would like to thank the History Goes Bump podcast. I got some of the history and hauntings from episode 33 of their podcast.
Yeah, I like their podcast.
Their blog for that episode will be in the show notes. It was pretty cool. So yeah, that's my episode.
Awesome.
And yeah. Do you have anything else?
I do not.
All right. If you have any stories or requests of anything you want to hear about or know anyone who does, please email me at afraidishpodcast@gmail.com. Email me anything, like I always say. Instagram and Facebook at afraidishpodcast. Tell me anything you want to hear about next, like any haunted location.
Personal experiences. Yes,
for real. All the links will be in the show notes. I do have this on YouTube as audio, but not video yet. You can listen on, well, anywhere you listen to podcasts. Also, rate and review on Apple Podcasts and rate on Spotify. 5 stars, please. You can now support this show with a small monthly donation to help sustain future episodes. This will help with updating recording equipment and other necessities for the podcast. And I'm still trying to figure out what to do for Patreon. The link for that will be in the show notes. I am about to start a merch store. I've literally been working on that for the last few days. Basically have shirts and some other merch going up pretty soon. So yeah. Exploring the unknown and mysterious is always interesting, just like trying a new flavor of an adult beverage. Like a cryptid, the taste may be unfamiliar initially, but discovering something unique and exciting makes it worth the adventure. Until next time, don't be afraid of the dark. Be afraid-ish of what's in it. Bye.
Bye.
You know, of course there's an entity called Annabelle. I wonder if there was a creepy-ass doll there for her to play with or possess.